This episode was co-produced with Splint Invest, a regulated Swiss financial institution that helps private investors diversify their portfolio by providing easy access to alternative investments like art, luxury watches, and rare whiskey. With the Splint Invest app, you can start investing with as little as 50 Swiss francs. And in fact, Swisspreneur listeners can make their first investment for free by downloading the app and entering the promo code DOLLY24. Click the link in the description to learn more and redeem your investment voucher.
The more you talk with women entrepreneurs, the more you realize that there are many people in your situation. Maybe there are not that much visibility, and still there are some people that are hesitant whether you can do both. So I think it's also important that we send the message that you can take a leadership role and still have your family and being a mother. You don't have to refuse.
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Sylvan.
Anna, a warm welcome to the Swisspreneur Show. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
You're the co-founder and CEO at Recolony, a biotech startup developing a bacteria-based oral therapy to treat cancer. That sounds already like a very important mission, and we're going to dive into that. Before we do so, I want to talk about your personal background. You actually studied biology in Spain, but then also in Austria. But here today, we are in Switzerland. So what brought you to Switzerland?
So that was a very interesting journey. So you're right, I started to study biology in Spain. There I did my bachelor's studies and my master's as well. And then I moved to Austria to do my PhD. And after my PhD, I returned to Spain for a short time. But then I still wanted to explore a bit more. And I thought Switzerland is a country full of opportunities. And the initial idea was to continue my development as a researcher. So That's why I came here initially.
So it was really research driven to say, hey, Switzerland is a good place to do research and a next career step potentially.
Exactly. That was the idea.
How was your arrival here? You know, I know compared to the Spanish sun, it's probably less welcoming here in sort of gray Zurich sometimes. How was your start, your first arrival to Switzerland?
Actually, I didn't have that that impression. So when I arrived to Switzerland, for me, it felt like being at home somehow, even though it's very different from what I was used to in Spain. But I was also living in Austria for 4 years before.
Fair, close.
So in the end, the Alps are there as a background. And I loved it from the very beginning. The people I found and the way of living in Switzerland and in Zurich in particular. So I really love it from the beginning, and that's why I stayed.
And you not even only stayed here, 4 years after arrival into Switzerland, you then actually started your company, Recolony. So what was it that motivated you to take the entrepreneurial path after conducting the research in Switzerland?
So that's also very interesting how it happened, because that was not in my plans or in the original idea. I was doing my postdoc at the Department of Gastroenterology and Hepatology at the University Hospital Zurich. And I was getting very nice, interesting results with this bacteria that we saw that are able actually to treat tumors in the animal models. And because of that, because the results were so interesting, we thought, okay, this has a potential translation into the clinics and we should step into the startup. So the question was from my boss when he called me in his office and say, Anna, look, this looks very interesting. Would you like to step in the startup and have the role as a CEO, or maybe you are more comfortable staying in the research side and be the CSO of the company, for example, or maybe you don't want to do this at all and just stay as a postdoc, which I would be also very happy to continue supporting you in this. You can just think about it and then we can talk again. And for me at the beginning it was like, poof, my God, from being a researcher to being an entrepreneur, how to start, how is that done? But the more I was thinking about it, I was saying, like, why not? This is a challenge. It's not going to be easy, but I will learn a lot. And I would really like to bring this therapy into the clinic. So I knew already the first steps of that project. So that's why I took it and said, okay, let's take the challenge.
How do you make that decision? Because you said it's a big step, right? It's a big change from being a researcher to becoming an entrepreneur. How do you make that decision? Did you like write down pros and cons? Did you talk to many other people who did the same way and switched? What was your decision process?
I was more thinking about it internally. Mm-hmm. And normally I'm a person that takes decisions rather fast. And I'm also kind of bold to take decisions. Yeah. So it's like, what can I lose?
Sure.
There is more things that I can win that I can lose. Yeah. And I saw it like a very exciting idea to step into the entrepreneurial world. So I said, like, let's go for it. And also in Switzerland, the advantage is that you are very well supported, starting from the universities.
Yeah.
So I got also a lot of support from the university. They help you in the first steps, how to start, which kind of things you have to consider, gaining some knowledge from the business side, from the legal side, from the financial side. So you are gathering information. And of course, afterwards, you start talking with people that are in your same situation that also comes from academia. Mm-hmm. Maybe they are more advanced than you and you are just following the steps.
Yeah.
And step by step, it's happening. And at some point, you feel already comfortable in your role.
Amazing. And then you actually did found your company in 2022. You were a total of 4 co-founders. And how did you all meet them? Were they also actively working at the university hospital in Zurich? Or how did the 4 of you meet?
Yeah, we met at the lab. So in the team, so having an operational role, we are the 3 of us. Mm-hmm. Is Philip, Egli, and myself. We all three were working in the lab at the same time. They 2 were doing their PhD studies while I was doing my postdoc. And the 3 of us were the ones having cancer research projects. So we were discussing a lot and also doing experiments together. We got to discuss a lot about my project, for example. Yeah. So when they were about to finish their PhDs, I already knew them quite well, what they like, what they would like to do. And I asked them, hey guys, what are your plans after you're finishing your PhD? And would you like to join this venture? And they both say, yeah, I believe in the project. I would like to take this challenge together with you. And they both join me. So Egli is taking care of the science. She's very scientific oriented. Mm-hmm. She has great passion about it. And Philip was having more a focus into the business, into the strategy. So he has a different way of thinking. And all together, I think we put a great team together. We're all very motivated, looking into the same direction. So it's very important to be on the same page and also to share the motivation and trust each other. Yeah. And the 4th co-founder is our former professor, the one that initiated the idea in his lab.
Makes sense. So it sounds like it was quite an easy sell to your co-founders to join the adventure in the company.
Yeah, maybe they were as crazy as I was. But
exactly.
Yeah, they didn't hesitate much. Yeah.
Great. So now I know it can be quite technical, but for someone, you know, who doesn't understand the biological part, how can our gut microbiome help us to kill cancer cells? Can you explain that to me like I'm 5 years old and I have never heard about biology before?
Sure, I was right. So it's known more and more in the recent years that the microbiota is having an influence in our health and also in our disease. So if you think about it, we have evolving with our bacteria for thousands of years. So it's like a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. We cannot live without the bacteria. The bacteria cannot live without us in our bodies.
Yeah.
But only in the last 15 years or so, all this research came out like, okay, this bacteria seems to be interacting very closely with our immune system. At the beginning, there were some studies that showed that the bacteria has an influence in some inflammatory diseases. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, it came the topic of cancer. So what we found out, basically, was that there are several of these bacterial species that we found in that in colorectal cancer patients, they are less abundant than in healthy people. So the initial question was, could we treat colorectal cancer patients if we give back these bacteria they are lacking? Mm-hmm. That was the initial question. And that's what we brought into the lab with our animal studies. And we actually saw that we cannot only prevent colorectal cancer to happen, but also treat the tumors once they are established.
Wow, that's a game changer.
That's a game changer. And then the other question that came out was like, how is this bacteria actually working? Because even when the tumors are not present in the colon, but we are inducing the tumors subcutaneously, so they are under the skin. Imagine that the bacteria are in the gut, but the tumors are not together with the bacteria. The bacteria are in the skin because we were trying lung cancer, melanoma, breast cancer. Mm-hmm. We still had the anti-tumor effect. That was very surprising for us.
Wow.
So, of course, the bacteria, as the same as we have a metabolism, the bacteria also has a metabolism, and they produce molecules that have an impact in our bodies. And we found out the molecule that is having the anti-tumor effect. This molecule is traveling in the bloodstream, and it's activating the immune system against the tumor, wherever the tumor is located.
Wow, that's crazy. How did you then go? Because you sort of need to get that bacteria in the patient, right? How do you do that? How does that work?
That's the step we are currently in. So at the beginning, we were having the bacteria that was actively growing in the lab. We were growing it one day and the same day using it in our animal experiments. But of course, we cannot do the same with the patients. We need a therapy that it's out of the shelf, that can have a long shelf life. So what we are currently doing is with this bacteria, doing a lyophilized product, which means that the bacteria is being freeze and then it's dried. So it's a freeze-dry process.
Yeah.
In the end, we get what we can see is kind of a powder. And this powder is being encapsulated. And this capsule will be taken orally. They will be resistant to the gastric acids. And once the bacteria is, so the capsule is reaching the colon, the product is released and the bacteria are reactivated and they can start functioning. That's what we are currently doing. For that, of course, we need a company that is specialized in producing, manufacturing these kind of products.
Of course.
They have huge fermenters as the one that are being used for beer, for example. But they just have the bacteria there. And once the bacteria is producing huge quantities, they can do the freeze-dry process.
Wow. And how does that then work? Do I have to take that once? Do I have to take that daily over a longer period of time? Or what's your assumption there?
These are questions that are currently still to be answered, of course, because once we receive the drug substance, we will know how much bacteria we can actually encapsulate in each of the capsules. The more, the better. This will depend on how well the bacteria are reacting in the fermenters. And then in the clinical trials, we will answer this question. First, of course, we will still repeat some experiments in mice. And then in human, we will see how often it will necessary to apply this bacteria.
Makes sense. And describing this process, I assume it's difficult to obtain a patent for the bacteria itself because, you know, that's just out there. But I assume that you can sort of protect your idea and also IP with the process on how you would then produce that and make it available.
Yeah, there are different ways of protecting ourselves. We currently have a patent ongoing that is protecting the use of this bacteria we have found for the treatment or the prevention of different types of cancer. But of course, afterwards, we can dig a bit more to build up the patent strategy. For example, how is the formulation at the end looking like, and this kind of thing. So we cannot protect the bacteria itself because it's a naturally occurring product, but there are other ways of protecting ourselves.
Yeah. Because that's very important, right? For you as a business to have a defensibility to a certain degree. Can you talk also a bit more about where you stand at the moment with your, you know, go-to-market strategy, if I can call it that way, because it can be a very long process to make this revolutionary technology available.
Exactly. So drug development is a long process. We have the proof of concept. Now, as I said, we are producing the bacteria. We started with the manufacturing. We will do in these preclinical studies that are necessary also to show the regulatory authorities that we have a safe product. That is not only efficacious, but it's safe for the patient. So for this, we have to do certain studies to demonstrate that. For example, we have to demonstrate that our bacteria won't translocate outside of the gut and doing any damage in the patient.
Of course.
This we have to do with our animal studies as well. And afterwards, once this phase is completed, then we can go into the encapsulation, as I said before, and then go into the clinics. Well, of course, once we are into the clinics, we also need to do several clinical trials to demonstrate the safety, to demonstrate efficacy, and efficacy in a broad population, ideally in different types of cancer. The go-to-market is far ahead, but we plan like by 2030 to have the therapy ready.
And, you know, I know this is probably a hypothesis or a thing still to be figured out, but what's your current hypothesis or assumption on how your business model will look like, if you can already say how this will be?
Yes, so our plan is to run the early phases of clinical trials and afterwards for the late phases. So the big pharmas are the ones that know best how to manage that. So the idea is to establish partnership with big pharma companies that will take care of the late phases of the clinical trial and bring the product to the market.
Yeah. And I assume if your results are good and you continue on that journey, this becomes incredibly interesting for pharma companies to eventually just buy your company because they want to have the IP.
Exactly. So in the end, that's how it works for most of us, for most of the biotech companies. We start the development. Once we have lead candidates that are showing efficacy, it's when the pharma companies get interested and we are in the end bought out.
How do you see that as an entrepreneur yourself? Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Because I see the big leverage that the pharma companies bring to the table in terms of producing and distributing the drug. But at the same time, you sort of lose to a certain degree your autonomy of working and really building what matters most to you, I guess.
So there are different avenues here because we could still focus on discovery.
No.
Discovering new bacteria that could benefit or could target best certain type of cancer because there is a lot and very different ones. Also, this bacteria derived metabolites is another avenue. So we could still working on different assets. But of course, when going into late phases of clinical trials, the amount of money needed is very, very big. So you either need very big investments or just letting the pharma companies to do it because they know best how to go into those later stages.
And they have the financial resources to do so.
Exactly.
How do you do that right now? Because we heard 2030 is sort of the timeline. This is a very long time and still also quite a risky bet because it looks promising, but no one knows if it will eventually work out in the end. You still need to pay salaries. You need to invest money in continuing developing the drug. How do you fund everything?
So currently, we have funding from different sources. We started getting funding, like non-dilutive funding, The first money we got was from the Entrepreneur Fellowship from the University of Zurich. Then we got support also from the SNF, InnoSwiss Bridge, Proof of Concept. Those two fellowships were the first ones I got and the ones that kick off the project.
Nice.
Then we got support also from VentureKick,
yeah,
from the Geberruf Stiftung, InnoBooster, and the biggest fund we have now is from the Visurik Translational Center. So this joint accelerator of the ETH and the University of Zurich. They are supporting us since April last year and for 3 years altogether. Mm-hmm. So with this fund, we can cover the whole preclinical phase.
Wow.
The idea of these funds is to cover the valley of death that the biotechs are having during the first years when we have a lot to demonstrate still.
Right.
And it's the time when the investors are still hesitating to jump in.
Yeah.
So it's of great help for us. But of course, now we are already seeking more funds because the clinical trials are expensive. Yeah. And every time we need more and more. So we also have support from the Health Innovation Hub, from the University Hospital, that are not only supporting us with money itself, but also with resources, with coaching. So that's all we need at this stage.
Fantastic. You mentioned all very important initiatives, you know, to help in this very important first phase that is probably still too risky for investors. Mm-hmm. Still, how do you then make the decision to eventually get investors on board and at the same time ensure that you as founders don't get diluted too much, because you need a lot of capital, but investors want to have shares in return. And if you give up too much, it could even eventually kill your project.
So that's what nobody wants. The project is being killed. Everyone wants to have a successful project. But of course, you need to onboard the investors when you really need it and with the amount of money that you really need to achieve your next milestones. So it's important to have a good strategy, how much you will need, for how long, and discuss, of course, with people with more experience, with your advisors, with your board members, when is the right time and how much should we ask for in which moment.
Right. Is there any sort of inflection point where you say, this is until where grants should get us? Mm-hmm. And at this point, when you have this specific milestone X, that's when it's getting more attractive for investors, or when we actually want to attract investors to join. Where is this shift? Is there a certain milestone or inflection point that you see?
The most interesting inflection point for the investors in our case will, of course, be the moment we have efficacy data in clinical trials.
Yeah.
But to reach that point, we will need money.
Exactly.
Money
the
first.
Chicken and egg problem, right?
Because it's not cheap to run phase two clinical trials. Yeah. So we will need, of course, money before that. But for that, we will need certain amount of money and afterwards even more. So it's also the investments are a risky activity and mm-hmm. some people want to take the risk first and some of them prefer to take it later.
No.
But now we have the proof of concept, the clinical, so the preclinical data, it's a very strong one. So there are a lot of people that are already interested mm-hmm. in what we are developing. Of course, it's also a matter of the later you come in, the more expensive it will be as well for you, because our valuation is increasing.
And that's like juggling multiple balls, right? You have to focus on the development, but you as a founder as well, keeping the investors, you know, interested and getting the money flowing.
Exactly.
Multiple hats to wear. So another hat that you wear is you're not only an entrepreneur, but you're also a mother yourself. Mm-hmm. First of all, which of the two is harder?
Both are hard for sure. Both are very demanding, challenging, but also very rewarding. So there are several points that are common to parenting and being an entrepreneur. I couldn't say which one is harder. I think both of them have a very hard time. But of course, being a mother is a 24-hour job.
Yeah.
And being an entrepreneur, I try not to bring it home, to have also some part of my time outside of this role.
How do you combine these two very demanding jobs, so to say? Is there, you know, any boundary that you draw or any setup that works best for you? Like you said, ideally not bringing work home, for example.
Yeah, I think that's crucial to have like fresh energy every day to go into your job-related activities. Of course, you need also a lot of support. So having a supportive partner is key.
Yeah.
And if you have support from your family, it's even better, which is also my case.
Great.
So it's something that by your own would be even harder to do.
Yeah. So great support system is key to make it work.
That's for sure.
And in that case, I wonder, do you feel that there are enough role models out there who did both successfully, you know, to build a company, but to also raise kids or babies in that case, to do that successfully, to also, you know, be and serve as a role model to inspire more to do the same?
There are. And the more you talk with women entrepreneurs, the more you realize that there are many people in your situation. Maybe there are not that much visibility, and still there are some people that are hesitant whether you can do both.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's also important that we send the message that you can take a leadership role and still have your family and being a mother. You don't have to refuse to be in a leadership position just because you want to create a family.
Yeah.
So having both is possible, and there should be more and more women that are, you know, willing to do that without any fear.
Hopefully you are becoming a role model now by talking about exactly that and showing that it's possible. Who are some role models that you look up to or that you find inspiring and great role models?
So my first role models I found within my family, if I'm honest.
Great.
In my family, there are very strong women that were working and were having their families, and they could combine both without, you know, feeling that they are not there in either their own jobs, businesses, or with the family.
No.
So this was something I was always looking up to.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there are women entrepreneurs that are also close to me in the Swiss environment that you have seen, okay, these women are doing very good. They are mothers. They have their families and they are doing great. So you don't have to look much farther. There are great women in the Swiss biotech environment, that is the one closer to me, that are great role models also for me.
I like that, because this closeness probably makes it also more real, or realistic at least, where you see, hey, in your family and in the Swiss biotech ecosystem, you see that people do it and they serve as role model. The closeness is key, I guess.
Exactly, because you can have also like casual conversations with them, and you see that you are going through the same situations, or that maybe you were struggling with this or that, and it's not something that is happening just to you, but it's something common, and they can tell you, okay, I solved this in that way, or you can see it also from another perspective, or and just giving like something natural in the end. So you don't have to feel like, oh, I'm the only one going through this, or it's not common if I'm a man that I'm having a CEO role. So
exactly,
that's what it's important, I think, for the new generations to see that, okay, I can do both. I don't have to choose one in favor of the other.
Great. You're also a woman in the biotech ecosystem yourself. Would you say that being a woman, you have had a different experience than, for example, a man would have had?
I wouldn't say so, just because of being a woman in the biotech. Of course, in the topic we were talking about being a mom, you are more questioned. Rather, if you are being a dad, there is no question raised if you are a dad. But if you are a mom, they are like, well, will you be able to do this still? Yes, no. So you have to demonstrate that you can actually do it. If being a man, that wouldn't be a
question. It's not even a question. Wow.
Exactly.
That's crazy. How do you then do that? Like, how do you build that? Hey, I can do it. I prove it that I can do it.
Yes, just doing it. Yeah. It's the best way of demonstrating is just you do your job as you have done before, and then there is no more questions, I guess.
Is that mainly a question coming from investors? Because they're also usually, if you look at the statistics, very male dominated.
Yeah, in general, I think we are in an environment. The whole entrepreneurial environment normally was dominated by men. So I think this is some questions that are being raised now that in one generation wouldn't be a topic anymore.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. I also want to talk about the future. So we heard where you currently stand. There is a lot of things going on, very exciting things going on. So what are the immediate next milestones for you and Recolony?
So the next big milestone for us is to receive our drug substance. Because we are very excited to have the lyophilized product and test it in the animals to move as fast as we can into the clinics. That will be the big, big milestone. Regarding the funding, the next big milestone will be to raise our Series A funding and to continue building our team and our project in general. That would be the two big milestones.
Absolutely. How much money are you looking for the Series A round?
So we are looking about 10 to 15 millions. Yeah. And that will be important to push the not only the clinical trial, but also a second program that we are developing with a small molecule. Okay. And since the competition is tough, we want to be the first ones there. So the sooner you move with everything is the better.
Of course. And your timeline on closing the Series A, is that planned for 2024?
Exactly. We will be working on that from the beginning of 2024 and we plan to close it at the end of the year.
Fantastic. And now to wrap up the conversation, Anna, we also have some rapid fire questions for you. Okay. I had to give you different options to choose from or a short question and you have to answer in one sentence. You ready?
I will try.
Let's go. Spain or Switzerland?
Oh, that's tough.
I know.
My heart is divided. I cannot choose between one and the other.
Both in a good balance.
Of course.
I see. Researcher or entrepreneur?
I would say more entrepreneur nowadays, yes.
Research-based or research-powered entrepreneur?
Research-based entrepreneur, but it was evolution from one to the other.
Absolutely. What makes you get up in the morning?
Oh, currently it's my daughter.
Fair, yeah.
Literally.
She wakes you up?
She wakes me up in the morning. She's my alarm.
No need for an alarm clock.
But the motivation is both the family and my second baby, which is Recolony.
Fantastic. And what's your favorite family activity?
My favorite family activity currently is to go for long walks in the forest.
Nice.
I live close to the forest and I love seeing how it changes from season to season. It's very calm and relaxing environment.
Now it's a beautiful one with fall and all the colors, right?
Exactly. I love it.
And the last question for you today, what's one of the milestones that you have reached with Recolony that you're specifically proud of?
I would say to found out the mechanism of action of the bacteria to answer that question, how is this bacteria working? Because it was always the question, and for a long time we didn't know, but now we know.
It is a real game changer. Anna, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Lots of
success with, you know, all the milestones and the next steps that you're tackling, and amazing to see and follow your journey.
Thank you very much. Happy to share.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.